anybody is here in the audience for Senate Bill 700, we are not going to be taking that up this morning. And we'll open a public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 18A. And we have another guest celebrity committee counsel here to join us and tell us about this piece of legislation.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, SJR 18A comes here from Senator Floyd Prozanski. And you may remember in 2000, the Oregon voters approved ballot measure 3, which, long and short of it, basically requires a criminal conviction when you have a forfeiture. In those circumstances. Last session, then what happened is that was challenged. It was challenged at the Court of Appeals, and they questioned the constitutionality of the initiative on single subject issues and other constitutional matters. And the Court of Appeals found it unconstitutional, and in between, the legislature adopted some legislation that would, in House Bill 3457, in anticipation the Supreme Court would have upheld it. They didn't. They found it constitutional. What you have before you is an amendment to Section 10, Article 15 of the Constitution, which will make forfeitures a little bit more friendly for some people, particularly for law enforcement, at the same time protecting the integrity of the original ballot measure. You have SJR 8-5 amendments in front of you. This would call for the referral to the voters in May rather than November. That means the law would go into effect sooner. It would also be consistent with what the Senate did with HJR 49 and 50, the Victims' Rights Initiative, when that's been referred to the voters in May also.
And it looks like this already went through the House Judiciary Committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's correct.
Okay. And came to us with a unanimous
that's correct.
To adopt recommendation. Great. Okay, and we have a few people signed up to testify, and I'll first call Senator Floyd Prozanski. Yeah, sure. And Rob Bovet and Dana Vitalins, if you could all come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Floyd Prozanski, State Senator, District 4. What we have before you, as the council said, is really the referral that is was part of the product that occurred last session. Myself and Representative Olson were charged by the respective chambers to try to see what we could do regarding forfeiture, knowing of the conflicts that were there and the uncertainty as to what the Supreme Court was going to be doing with the matter that was before them. There were agreements that were made, and part of those agreements were that we would be putting together what you have before you and refer it to the voters if the courts did in fact come through and found that the measure was constitutional. We felt that this was something that the framework of the negotiations. The two individuals that are with me are here to really give you the ins and outs of how the process works, their perspective over the years of their work with the forfeiture laws. I will tell you that the two workhorses in this was Rob Lovett as well as Dave Fidanke, who Representative Olson and I basically delegated the charge that we got from our leadership to get them in the room, and they really worked hard, and we were able to put this together in a very short period of time. There's a little bit of framework that I think that's worth putting in place. The commitment that that came out of the first forfeiture measure basically said that law enforcement was going to be prohibited from using resources or a certain amount of the resources for direct purposes for law enforcement. That was one that, let's say, was in contention with the people who were working on that measure, and now we have an opportunity to actually, I think, clarify that. I stand in support of the SJR 18 that would, in fact, allow law enforcement greater access to money that comes through the forfeiture process because you still have the requirement of a nexus on a conviction. You actually have the conviction of an individual before the money is moved into other uses and purposes. There are some other questions that came up during the Senate hearings regarding animal forfeiture. And so we're here to answer any of the questions you have. And I think we'd like to ask you how much detail you'd like as to the measure, and we can respond accordingly.
I think given that this was thoroughly vetted in the House Judiciary Committee, probably I'll just let you give some brief testimony, and then we'll allow committee members to ask any questions they might have. And, Senator, did you wish to tell us about an amendment to this?
Yes, if it's, this is the appropriate time, we have the SJR 18-A5 amendment. The A5 amendment would basically set the election for this to be in May of 08, which would be our next primary. And as counsel said, the reasons we felt this is important is because we want to make sure the forfeiture laws are in place and can be utilized as readily and as quickly as possible. And by moving it to the May ballot instead of waiting until the November ballot, it will allow us to move quicker and getting it in place. The other thing that is still up for question that we will be working on and as a work group during the interim is putting together the statutory language that will be necessary to implement SJR 18 if it is in fact, and we do expect it will be approved by the voters. And then we're looking at whether we can actually have that in place so when the election occurs, we can go immediately, or whether we'll have to wait until the 09 session to actually do that. But we're going to, say, plan ahead, be prepared, and maybe this next February, if it makes the short list for leadership, be able to have that legislation in place, ready to go in place based on the approval by the voters in May of 08.
Great. And members, you should have that -5-A5 amendment in your packets with the staff measure summary. Okay. Thank you, Senator. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Levett, legal counsel for the Oregon Narcotics Enforcement Association. I'll keep this very brief. I was the lawyer that was on the case challenging the constitutionality of Measure 3, was successful at the Court of Appeals getting it overturned, but it was a narrow margin, 2-1, lost at the Supreme Court by a narrow margin, 4-3. So this was an at-play issue. Nobody was really sure what the outcome was, but the good news is that as the Senator mentioned, he and Representative Olson basically came to Dave Fedanke from the ACLU and myself and said, you guys need to sit down and work it out. Because, yeah, there's some things in Measure 3 that need to be adjusted, but, you know, you really do need to acknowledge that we need a higher level of proof. We need to protect due process for folks. We need to require a criminal conviction. We need to make sure we use the money for more than just law enforcement. We use it for drug courts and relief nurseries and such. And so Dave and I sat down with a few of our colleagues, and we worked it out. And then the Supreme Court later overturned the Court of Appeals and said, oh, Measure 3 is still good law. And so now we have the commitment from not only this, the senator, but from all the folks that sat around that table back in 2005 to essentially bring forth a measure that would essentially conform Measure 3 to the deal we struck in 2005. And that's what Senate Joint Resolution 18 does. And we also have a further commitment to work, as the senator mentioned, in the interim to further improve not only our civil forfeiture laws, but also our criminal forfeiture laws to make sure we have full, adequate protections for everybody and that we allocate the money in appropriate ways. We need some technical tune-ups. I'll just give you one example. Our old forfeiture law, which is still on our books, basically sends 10% of forfeiture proceeds to the DEQ Meth Lab Cleanup Fund. And that was a wonderful and necessary thing back in the 1990s, but as you may know, we got rid of meth labs in Oregon. They just don't exist anymore. We didn't just reduce them, we eliminated them. So putting 10% of proceeds into a fund to clean up meth labs that don't exist anymore is kind of a waste of 10% of monies. So just one example of where we need to just make some modifications and changes and improvements to our law. So I would strongly encourage you to move Senate Joint Resolution 18 with the suggested changes, which I think is why this bill is in front of this committee, so we can change it from November to May.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Dinah Vitolins, and I'm a deputy district attorney in Crook County and here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. And all I'll say is that we support the bill and ask that you do as well as the -A5 amendments. Thank you.
Okay. Questions for these witnesses? Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The section 10 on page 3, the lines 13 and 14 concerning the forfeiture of animals have been used. Just to make sure I have this correct, what that does, it places abused animals outside of this law that we're proposing so they can be cared for, they can be taken in accordance to our current abuse laws. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, that's exactly correct. Back in 1995, we worked closely with the livestock industry to actually create a comprehensive scheme to deal with animals, both abused, neglected, and otherwise. It's in ORS 167, and it provides all the procedural due process protections. The funky part of Measure 3 that was it was not intended to deal with animals at all, but the courts have ruled that it does apply to animals. It's basically pounding a square peg into a round hole. So those procedural protections that protect the livestock industry, that protect animal husbandry, are all in existing statutes and aren't in need of amendment.
Thank you very much. May I follow?
Yeah, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 1, lines 15 to 16, when it talks about the proceeds from forfeited property should be used for treatment of drug abuse unless otherwise specified by law for another purpose. In reference to what you were just talking about in terms of meth labs or whatever, basically the legislature will have to then pass additional legislation to use these funds for other reasons besides drug abuse laws?
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, actually we already did that in House Bill 3457. We allocated 20% of forfeiture revenues to drug courts, 10% to relief nurseries, and then little pieces to all kinds of different places.
Great. Thank you very much.
Great. Further questions for these witnesses? Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This may be more question for our counsel. I'm not sure. Just to make sure, in the A5 amendments, as it refers to holding this on the next primary election, if, in fact, we did move the presidential primary up, I assume the statutory definition of primary election is still the main one that is in May, even if the presidential primary would happen to be earlier. Is that a fair assumption?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hunt, that's a great question. The next primary election, if we had a presidential election, that to me, and that was a primary election, that very well could be the next primary election. That would also impact the victims' rights initiatives, too.
It is true that this committee did move out a piece of legislation that would move the date of the presidential primary to February of 08. I have not heard that piece of legislation was moving out of ways and means, but I guess it could happen in the waning days of the session.
And here one could argue that it's somewhat ambiguous, and if you would have set legislative history by stating on the floor that it were to be the next primary election for the state as opposed to presidential, that may clarify it.
Well, maybe that being true, Madam Chair, if I could just ask the witnesses to all reaffirm their intent that this be on the May 2008 election.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, I'll say it, I think for myself and for the others, we are intending this to be in May of 08, based on what our primary elections cycle is now, not what it may turn out to be based on some other legislation that comes through this process, this session.
Okay. And so I think we, having stated that's our intention, we would be able to adopt this amendment and have that be the legislative history.
Madam Chair, I think that would make it easier to put it on the May ballot opposed to an earlier ballot if, in fact, we were to have a presidential primary compliant event.
Okay, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I think this improves the law quite a bit. However, there was one thing that stood out to me, and I had a question whether on bottom of page 2, where it talks about protection of innocent property owners, it's removed. And the whole section starting on line 44, 45, and continuing on the top of page 3, All that's in there now is the protection of financial institutions that have an interest in a property that's being questioned or, you know, might be forfeited. I guess I'm concerned about what was removed there and if there's any protection for innocent property owners.
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, yes. Actually, a lot of those protections are higher up in the bill that are rewritten in the bold in the higher section. Plus, in addition, the deal we worked out in House Bill 3457 has the specific kind of ad nauseum procedural protections for all innocent owners. The law currently, even in the absence of Measure 3, prohibits us from forfeiting property from innocent owners.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Representative Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really do like this. I think it is that place in the middle that does those things, and I just want to make sure that I clearly understand this. And so what we have done is that in civil forfeitures, we have institutionalized by this certain rights, and it is the duty of the state to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt that that was used in that, you know, to get that money, and it's not the homeowners. When it comes to a criminal prosecution and things like money, guns, and whatever, or in the proximity of a drug deal, then it shifts, and it is the responsibility of the defendant to show that there is some evidence. Not to the same extent, but...
Madam Chair, Representative Roland, actually, if you reverse those two, that could have possibly accurately characterize the way things were before forfeiture reform. But what we have done with criminal forfeiture is that requires the highest burden of proof, proof beyond a reasonable doubt. With the civil forfeiture reforms that we have put into effect, is we will still have to have a criminal conviction for somebody for these offenses. Plus, we have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the proceeds or the property was used to facilitate that crime. So there is no burden shift anymore to claimants or defendants. The government, under the proposed reform package, is required to establish the burden of by clear and convincing evidence.
Follow up.
Yeah, section or part B of 6, I guess it is where I got the confusion then.
Oh, in terms of the close proximity requirement that creates that, essentially that presumption. That's been a long presumption that we've had both in the civil and criminal forfeiture laws. So, you know, if you've got money next to dope, there creates a presumption that, you know, they're tied to gas and, to narcotics. It's June. It's June and it seems late.
Right.
But, yeah, that has been a longstanding presumption that through the negotiation process we all agreed to continue.
Okay, good. That's
good. Okay, any additional questions for these witnesses? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Members, I think that our staff has gone to get a copy of the piece of legislation dealing with the presidential primary that we adopted, and we're going to take a look at that before we move into work session on this. So if you could... I suppose it would make it clearer if we just... got the amendment redrafted so it specified the May primary election.
I was going to suggest that, Madam Chair, that I think for clarity to make certain that everyone, there's no dispute. It sounds like we have enough time, and I think LC could probably turn that out for you before your next meeting.
Which is tomorrow morning.
And I would suggest that way it's clear for everyone, and we don't have to worry about putting stuff on the record and people not knowing what's
going on. And I think given the language that says at a special election on the same date as the next primary election, that would clear up any ambiguity there is about which primary we're talking about. So.
This says held on a different
date.
And
style. Yeah, but as long as we've got time, we might as well get it spelled out very clearly. So I will close the public hearing on SJR 18. And if there's anyone in the audience for SB 700, we are not going to be taking that up this morning. We'll carry it over to our next hearing. And I'll open a... open a work session on House Bill 2060.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2060 creates an 11-member commission on legislative campaign finance reform, declares an emergency, takes effect upon passage of the Dash 2 from Representative Buckley, which changes the membership of the commission to 13, includes 4 senators, 4 representatives, 5 public members. And you have also the Dash 3 from Representative Thatcher, which provides for equal representation between major political parties among the appointed legislators. It also has some requirements for the non-legislators as far as political affiliation. And it adds to the purpose of the task force, reducing accounting expenses, improving access to campaign finance information, improving Secretary of State assistance to candidates and committees.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, for the members' information, I did have a chance to discuss House Bill 2060 with some of our Senate colleagues. The concern at this point is that we are at the end game and that this will need to go to Ways and Means, and that there's a limited what's the word I'm looking for? A little enthusiasm for task force type of entities at this point. And it's my feeling that the best shot we might actually have to get something through would be the original bill, given that it would only require a limited number of legislators in terms of the money that would need to be appropriated would be less than the amendment that I had proposed. And I'd be willing, if the other members are willing, since we are in a work session, I would like to make a motion that we move House Bill 2060, and will we move it directly to Ways and Means, Madam Chair?
Does it have a subsequent referral?
It does not have a subsequent referral. I think on the Senate side, they've been routinely sending these to Ways and Means. That's not been the case on the House side, so I would guess you'd have your choice.
So I think we could probably send it to the floor and then moves beyond that point. Yeah.
I would like to move House Bill 20.
Well, I was going
to
say, I think that we could.
If we amended it? Could we amend it and send it directly to the floor?
I think actually it's got it will go directly to the floor right now, and then
I think the picture
better. Do the amendments send to the floor?
Madam Chair,
yes.
If I understand Representative Buckley's concern is if you add more members of the legislature, you add to the cost of it, and that adds problems.
That's what I got from what you were saying too. So I think the more members, the higher the price tag becomes. Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Well, I was proposing an amendment that didn't add people. It just divided it between parties.
Although I think in the original version, since there are only two, you can probably rest assured that that's what would happen. So. So, Representative Buckley, are you making a motion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2060. I guess I'm moving it to the floor, Madam Chair? Or am I moving it directly?
To the floor.
I'd like to move House Bill 2060 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Buckley has moved House Bill 2060 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and this would basically be forwarding the recommendation that came from the Public Commission on the legislature. So I think we had testimony on this at earlier hearings, and is there discussion? Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would I will vote for the motion. I like the other amendments. I think that the discussion we had here, including with people who were on that commission, that it really is going to take a legislative fix to make this happen, and having the legislators involved would be really good. I hope that some people who are interested in this, who are legislators, will make sure that they are a part of it, regardless of whether they are appointed members. And I would encourage that to happen with people who see that, because I agree that it is going to be something that requires legislators to have the buy-in to it. And having sat through this session and listened to the commission reports come back, which I have many times really agreed with, but we don't have the will of the group here that has to vote on it, and so it makes it difficult to get through. And I believe that the opportunity that Representative Buckley and Thatcher had put together in these amendments would have made a better solution in the long run. So I'm willing to go there. I just am. They sold me on their other end. It's just hard.
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sponsor Representative Roblin, thank you. Even if we cannot get this through Ways and Means, I do think it's essential to have a work group, to have a legislative connection to it. If it does go through Ways and Means, I'd like to expand it to other representatives, at least in terms of keeping them in the loop and coming forth with proposals. Some of the ideas that came from the Senate side I thought were very interesting in terms of actually looking at judicial campaigns and looking at how we actually raise money for campaigns for judicial races. So I think expanding the scope is a positive, and getting the buy-in is definitely a positive. And we can do that in a side work group situation. I would hope that even no matter what happens with this, that we will come back with proposals for our next session.
Okay, thank you for the comment. Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I just wanted to add to what I was previously saying. It wouldn't only divide party membership between the legislators. It would divide it amongst the seven appointed public members as well, making sure that two are Republicans, two shall be Democrats, and then two of neither party, and then at least one rogue. I mean, I tip it either way, but it does put, I think, introduce a little more balance, and then it adds just a couple more things for the task force to look at, other than I think the direction appears to be publicly funded campaigns. That's at least that's what I look at when I see this original proposal. But anyway, I like the thought of adding some of the last three issues in my amendment, which would entail reducing accounting expenses and improving the accessibility and utility of the campaign finance information for the public. And then looking at ways to improve the effectiveness of the elections division, helping with compliance with these elections laws. I think that would help really improve our elections process quite a bit by adding just those items. So I don't know. I it wasn't adding more people. It was just spelling out a little more equal division of parties, since this is directly involved with parties and elections. It seems like it ought to be spelled out, and it should help the process improve, not only for the first five items mentioned, which I don't see any other answer, any other conclusion for separating legislative policy and campaign contributions and expenditures, or restraining escalation of legislative campaign costs and spending, which we kind of did with the robocalling thing. We can get it cost a little more, but anyway. Shifting a balance of legislative campaign activity away from fundraising and toward discussion of policy issues, decreasing dependence of legislative candidates on contributions from special interest groups. To me, it just all points that we're wanting to justify publicly funded campaigns. That, you know, that's the conclusion I arrive at when I read this legislation, and I'm not wild about that, I have to say. But I think it would be improved by adding those last three items and spelling out a division between the parties.
And I appreciate your comments. I would also just point out that the next goal of the task force is preserving the legislative tradition of resolving issues in a bipartisan manner. I guess I don't read it as presuming any particular outcome. And having watched the debate over campaign finance reform for some time myself, I know that it is really, really difficult to achieve consensus around how to change our system, and we repeatedly haven't been able to do it. So I just think it would be a good vehicle to start the discussion. Is there further discussion? Okay. Would you,
yeah, right here.
Andy, please call the roll.
Aye.
Representative Bowman?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative
Escobar? No.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Buckley, would you like to carry this on the floor?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2060 and open a work session on Senate Bill 134A. Mr. Stemberg, please tell us about this bill.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 134A authorizes the Veterinary Medical Examining Board to inspect the premises of a veterinary facility. It authorizes the board to order mental, physical, and professional competency examinations when the board has evidence indicating the incapacity of an applicant or licensee to practice veterinary medicine safely.
Okay, and members, I have received some correspondence about this bill, but I haven't. We haven't actually had any testimony on it. So is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify about Senate Bill 134? Please come forward.
Everybody points to somebody.
Right.
You're the one.
Are we on the record?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Lori Mockinen, Director of the Veterinary Examining Board, and I'm partly responsible for all the paper that some of you have been receiving about this bill. My understanding of the reason why it's before you is that even though it passed through the Senate and House committees, a representative had some concerns about due process rights of licensees, and so it was brought back to you. That representative has, according to my understanding, withdrawn her concerns about it. The bar does not support the amendments that were under consideration. The Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, representatives of which are here behind me, support 134A as is, and the board would urge you to pass it out as is.
Now, I wonder if you could just tell us what this bill does and what the need for it is.
Sure. Madam Chair and members, a couple of sessions ago we had a situation with a veterinarian who allowed six horses in her care to starve almost to death. And in the course of that investigation, we found out that we don't have authority to compel a licensee to undergo an evaluation to determine whether he or she is competent. And the concern in that case, even though those horses were not under her care as a veterinarian, the board was concerned that the judgment or the poor judgment that she exhibited in allowing those horses to starve might carry over into her work as a veterinarian. We were not able to determine that because we don't have the authority. So Senator Schrader brought Senate Bill, I believe it was 314 in the last session, which gave the board authority to discipline a licensee who refuses to undergo a competency exam. We thought we had everything under control with that, and then just a couple of years ago, we had a situation with a veterinarian who has been charged with child sexual abuse and incest. And once again, the board wanted to ensure that the judgment that this person exhibited in his private conduct would not affect his capability to practice safely as a veterinarian. So we issued a notice, and his attorney discovered that we had a hole in our statute, and the hole is that we lack the authority, the underlying authority, to direct a licensee to undergo a competency evaluation. And that's why we're here with 134.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from committee members? Yes, Vice Chair Berger.
What do you mean by a competency evaluation? What does that consist of for the veteran?
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, it would consist of whatever is necessary given the facts of a complaint. In other words, if we had a complaint, which we currently do, that a licensee has a neurological disease that renders him allegedly incapable of performing surgery because of hand tremors. In a situation like that, we would ask that licensee to have an MD or another qualified professional evaluate him and bring a determination back to the board as to whether he could indeed continue to do fine surgeries. In the case that I just mentioned with the child abuse case, we would probably want that licensee to undergo whatever psychiatric evaluation applies in that situation. So the underlying need for 134 is in part because the board comprises veterinarians as well as vet tech and two public members, and they're qualified to judge veterinary medical issues, but they can't make a determination as to somebody's competency in other areas.
Could I follow up question? If just to get on the record, if you find incompetence or decertify, whatever the term is, for a veterinarian, what is their appeals process?
At the point where the board takes a public disciplinary action, which is not, 134A does not bring this into the public, if the evaluation indicated to the board that the licensee was impaired in some way, then the board would revert to its customary process, which is to issue a notice of discipline or an order of revocation, suspension, whatever the decision was. At that point, the licensee has the option of requesting a contested case hearing, unless the board issues an emergency suspension. In an emergency suspension, the licensee still can contest it, but they need to stop practicing right away, and then the board does, I think, you know, as soon as practicable, has a hearing so that the licensee has the option to defend.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And it looks from the language to me as if this would apply to all complaints that would happen after this takes effect and also to all complaints that you would have pending right now. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure about that. I would hope it would apply to current situations as well as any that arise after the...
It says that the amendments apply to all complaints before and investigations undertaken by the examining board on or after the effective date of this act. So that to me sounds like it's complaints that you currently have underway. Okay. Other questions? Yes, Representative
Roblin. More comments than questions. This bill originated in the Agriculture Committee, of which I was chair. I was going, it originally came out of our committee unanimously and was on the consent calendar. Some colleagues had a concern about that, so they asked that we put it on the regular agenda, which I agreed to, and I became the carrier of this bill. At that point, as it was moving forward, one of the representatives, a couple of representatives came and said, we're really concerned it needs to have some changes because we made these changes to a similar group in the health committee, and we think they need to be consistent, to which I didn't necessarily agree, but was willing to send this to here. Subsequently, the governor and others have come out and said this is the way they would like it, not the other way. And the real issue has to do with, I think protection of people's rights is an important one. What happens in these cases is if they really don't want to go through this voluntary examination process, that the board will instruct, they do have the right to go to circuit court and to stop that. That is a choice they can make. Most people voluntarily do it, and it moves the process quickly. It allows them to come up with some information which can help guide them in making a decision. I think that's appropriate personally. I think it's been vetted well. It's moving along, and I would love to get it back on the floor. So I think the things have been done right, and I hope we have allayed the fears of all the other people on this one. I think that there are still people who want to have the discussion on the floor. I have no problem with that, but that's kind of where it's at from my perspective.
Thank you for your comments. Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's not a question. It's just a little follow-up comment. I think some good issues were raised about keeping it private versus opening it up to public scrutiny before any conclusions have been reached. However, I guess you can say I still have a little bit of a mental problem with a government body ordering a mental exam on a person. And so that bothers me, but I said I voted out of committee, and that's where I leave it. I may change my mind on the floor. So.
Thank you, Representative. Yes, Representative Roblin.
One last comment to that one, because I understand that with respect to the mental competency. I think that will be a rare one. I think you're going to see most of them will have to do with physical. When people, especially in surgery, they still think that they can do that adequately, and they may have a tremor, they may have some other kinds of issues with respect to performing that surgery, and that one is mostly a demonstration as opposed to this other kinds. I think those are the extreme ones that I would expect it would be done rarely. And if you look at the case that they've shown here, it's one of those cases that I would certainly want to know that they were competent. So,
thank you. And thank you for your testimony. And I do have a statement from the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association saying that they do also support the Senate bill as it is currently before us. So, and I see head nods from their representatives in the audience. Okay, I will close the public hearing on Senate bill. Oh, I guess we're in a work session, actually. We did not have a public hearing. So, we're in a work session, and... Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I am a little concerned that Representative Thatcher might do a minority report to include legislators in this. I will move Senate Bill 134 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Buckley moves Senate Bill 134A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Andy, please call the roll. Excused.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
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 The motion carries. And is there a volunteer to carry this on the floor?
I would love to carry it along with Kim Thatcher. If Kim Thatcher wants to be a co-carrier with me, I'd be glad to have...
Representative Thatcher,
I can change my vote to no. I don't think you will.
All right. We will let Representative Roblin carry it. Then And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 134. And members, I think we need to, I will reopen the public hearing on SJR 18A. And I think we need to have a little more discussion about this on the record before we...
Standing just outside the door is Ted Rollinger and Dave Hendricks from Legislative Council's office, and as soon as they come in here, we can get an explanation. Ted is the drafter of 2084. Dave is the drafter of SJR 18. And Ted will say that given his reading of House Bill 2084, he doesn't think that there's an issue here. However, if there is an issue, there is a solution.
Well, that's encouraging news. Welcome, Ted.
Thank you. Ted Rollinger, Legislative Council. I don't think there's an issue in the cases where the referral clauses refer a measure to a special election held on the date of the next primary. House Bill 2084, which sets up the presidential primary, carefully distinguishes between the primary in May and presidential primaries, which would be held only in 2008 in February. So it seems to me that that alone is enough to make it clear that if you say something's going to the primary, that it's going to be the regular May primary, which is defined by statute as being on the third Tuesday in May of even-numbered years. If, however, you wanted even more safety, it would be probably a good idea to add a simple amendment to House Bill 2084, if it's going to become law, to say something like, oh, by the way, if the legislature refers something to the primary election, what we mean is the May primary election and not the presidential primary.
So it sounds like you're confident that this amendment that is before us, the A5s, make it clear that we are talking about the May primary and not any other?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, yes.
And could you explain, Ted, why the language has to say at a special election held on the same date as the next primary election?
Madam Chair, that's been the practice of the legislature forever. I worked here for years before I understood that myself. And I believe the answer is that the May primary election is technically a nominating election for the major political parties. That's the main purpose of the May primary election. Independent candidates, minor party candidates do not appear on the election ballot in May. It's just for the major parties. So if a measure is also referred to that election, you technically have to call a special election for purposes of putting the measure on the ballot. And that's what this language is about. It's traditional. It's been that way forever.
So basically any referral that we would do for a May election or a November election too,
November
is different.
No, you don't have to do that for the general because at that election, everybody appears on the ballot.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that explanation.
Question.
And yes, Representative Roblin.
Thank you again very much. Another part of why I think it needs to say special is an issue that I've been working with. I'll just ask this here because it's one I continue to work on. A lot of our little districts do put measures on during those elections. And as they read the statute, they would say if it's not a special election, they shouldn't have to pay because in the statute it basically says if there is a special election, the other parties have to pay their share of that in the counties. And there has always been a contention that they shouldn't have to. If we're already going to have this election, then it isn't a special election, and therefore they shouldn't have to pay their share. It should just be part of what they do, which would happen in the November elections usually, but not on these. And so by putting special every time, they know that they are paying for a special election. Would that be consistent with what your belief is? Or that's a bigger question. And I've been researching this one for a while, so I'm...
Yeah.
In the midst of it for a couple of my people.
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I can't answer that one off the top of my head.
I understand. But there's more to it than I think that people know.
Okay. Any other questions for Ted? Okay. Thank you for your clarification. Members, with that clarification, I think that I would be comfortable moving this today. So let's close the public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 18. Open a work session on SJR 18A.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
I move the A5 amendments be adopted to Senate Joint Resolution 18.
Representative Berger moves the A5 amendments to Senate Joint Resolution 18. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, amendment is adopted. And Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Joint Resolution 18 as amended to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation.
Representative Berger moves Senate Joint Resolution 18A as amended to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make note of the fact that the House Bill 3457, which again is part of this, I thought was one of the highlights of the 2005 session, the fact that all sides with concerns of that issue were able to work so hard to come up with legislation that protected civil liberties while also doing what was necessary in terms of law enforcement, particularly in terms of drug crimes. I thought it was an excellent piece of legislation. I'm very glad to see this before us today.
Thank you for your comment. And Andy, please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. Is there a volunteer to carry this on the floor? Representative Berger?
I'd be happy to. I'd be
all
happy.
Right.
Do we want to wait a few minutes and see if Representative Hunt can come in and
vote
on this?
There's two of them he's missed. Here he comes. Well,
he's
no
very
role.
Considerate of you. He's on the cell phone, though.
Well, we can open it up.
Okay. So,
I will carry it. And, Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended and Representative Hunt be allowed to cast a vote on SJR 18.
Representative Berger moves that the rules be suspended in order to allow Representative Hunt to vote on SJR 18. Is there objection? Seeing none, the rules are suspended, and I'll reopen the work session on SJR 18. And Representative Hunt, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
He votes aye.
Madam Chair.
And I'll close the work session on SJR 18. And Representative Berger, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended and Representative Hunt be allowed to vote on Senate Bill 1348.
Representative Berger moves that the rules be suspended in order to allow Representative Hunt to vote on SB 1348. Is there objection? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. I will reopen the work session on SB 1348. Representative Hunt, how do you vote?
If I vote no, can I do an audio poll with Representative Hunt? I'm an aye.
He votes aye. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1348. Members, with nothing further to come before us this morning, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.